Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. a little harried, as always, but, you know, such is life.
Yeah, it happens.
There's so much to do.
You got
a little time.
You got
to do it.
A book deadline coming up, I think.
I do. I am convinced I would be the world's greatest writer if only I was able to concentrate for more than about 5 minutes at a time.
Yeah.
It's just that one little thing that stands in between me and world domination.
I guess you just got to want it more.
Yeah. Good. Now we've added to my self-flagellating anxieties. I don't want it enough.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
That's what I'm saying is you're welcome. Oh, I gave you a shortcut that didn't work quite right, but close.
No, it worked pretty good.
The fact that I'm building my own tools for movable type because it's
no, who else is going to do it? Yeah.
There is a WordPress version of Six Colors that's half created that might end up happening someday because all I need, as I wrote many years ago, you know, I know movable type and I can do almost anything with it. So, and I need to get the site up quickly. So I did it that way, but I would be open to using something like WordPress if I had a reason to do it, and I might have a reason to do it, but it just hasn't. It's sort of like a
I like that it's
your, mostly there.
It's your Mac running on an Intel processor in the lab, essentially. Just like, yeah, it's proof of concept. It can be done. Just need to flip the switch.
I actually bought there's an app that is like web development on your Mac app.
Okay.
What's it called? Oh, I'm gonna have to find it now. Oh, and it might even be on my, it might be on my other drive, on my Mojave drive.
Oh.
What's it called? God, this is really good podcasting.
Oh, yes, that app. The app, the name of which is right on the tip of my tongue, and I think if I just really reach back there.
I was going to say, but it's like a dumb name. It's MAMP.
Ah, yes,
MAMP,
sure.
And it basically there's a like a pro version of it, and basically you can like install WordPress and run it on the Mac. And I've been using that for kind of local WordPress hacking, and it's fine. Until it gets to the networking part and getting the networking to work. So I could like, I was trying to knock a hole in my firewall to make it accessible, but I could not get it to work right. And I just decided I'm going to leave my WordPress experiment to the side until I can get Greg to set it up.
That's
on my server.
So of course, I mean, back in the day when I did do web development professionally, I used LAMP. Which,
I love
as you
LAMP.
Might guess, yes, is basically MAMP, but on Linux instead of Mac. And yeah, that's exactly what I used to do all my programming. But
sure.
Yeah, I think about that sometimes, and I remember that was the last time I was professionally employed to do that was now 14 years ago. So I have lost pretty much any skills that I have in that. I do maintain my own setup for that. I mean, I do have... My personal site runs on a Linode that runs Linux with Apache and MySQL and PHP and on WordPress, you know. So like I do dabble in that a little bit, but I know just enough to be dangerous is the way I like to think about it. So yeah, it's I have that issue. Actually, right now I'm having an issue with that because and I'll trust all of you Six Colors listeners not to exploit this, but I got notified that the version of PHP that my WordPress site is running on is basically out of date and I can't update because I'm on an older Linux distro.
Mm-hmm.
So one of these moments, and as I determined once by accident, trying to just update your... You think people complain a lot about, you know, we've been talking about Catalina and like complaining about the upgrade path. The fact that you can download an updater and just be like, update my system, and it just works, makes everything with Linux.
It's rocket science.
Linux is so bad about that.
So the server on which The Incomparable and Six Colors runs, it's the server from which this MP3 emanated and got to you, dear listener. every time I log into it, and this has been the case for at least 6 months, I get this. This Ubuntu 12.04 LTS system is past its end of life and is no longer receiving security updates. To protect the integrity of this system, it's critical that you enable extended security maintenance updates. New release 14.04.1 LTS available.
You should know, mine runs on 14.04, which is also now deprecated, so don't upgrade to that.
Yeah, so, and Greg and I have been talking about it. This is the thing, though. It's exactly what you said, which is, the new versions of Ubuntu are great, except for one thing, which is they run a new version of Perl that breaks movable type.
Oh, yeah, there it is. There it is.
So, Greg's like, I can make it work. I can install the old version, but it's like, he can make it work, he says, but it's also one of those cases where he has not done it for like 6 months or a year, because I think he can't bear to do it. So
it's just, I don't know. And some of this stuff is just pointing out, it's so non-trivial, right? Like, it's the fact that, you know, I looked into upgrading, my Linux distro, and it was the one time I did it by accident thinking, oh, I'll just hit the update stuff and it'll work. It broke everything, and I had to like roll back to a backup because it was so fried. So, yeah. And I've looked around a bit, and the general suggestion is essentially, make a brand new Linode.
Yeah, that's actually what we're probably going to do, is we're going to make a new server. We're going to build the new server. We're going to migrate the data. We're going to make sure the new server works. And then we're going to flip in the new server for the old server. That's how we have to do it.
And that's exactly what I need to do for my personal site. Yeah.
And there are people out there who are listening to this going, oh my God, this is the worst. And there are people out there who are like, these guys don't know anything.
You guys are idiots.
Right? It's both of those are out there. But anyway, it's fun. Software upgrades are fun everywhere. Yeah. Everywhere.
Yeah, I it's enough to make me think that like co-locating a Mac Mini or something would just be nicer, but that's also, I think, a lot more expensive.
That's why they do that. Yeah, it is going to be more expensive. And the Mac has server limitations. Take it from me, a guy who wrote a book about using classic Mac OS as a server.
It's gotten a little better since then, I'll say
it
that.
Has. Although, you know what? The great thing about classic Mac OS was it was essentially unhackable because nobody expected a Mac to be a server. And the Mac in those days, I mean, it didn't have, like, there was no command line to get to.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And so that it had all that going for it, but that's all it had going for it.
Yeah, it wasn't really designed in
Well, I didn't write a whole book. I wrote half a book. I had a co-author. We wrote a book about it. In 1994, five, tens of copies of that book.
I wrote a book about using the Mac in like the family sharing, and all. I half wrote a book about that, which I still don't know anything about. Also sold tens of copies. No, I have a dead Mac Mini sitting here. Even like, maybe is there some way I could? No, there's nothing I can do with that. I can't make this into a thing. I enjoy mucking around with a server. Is one of those things I consider kind of a hobby. Like, it's a thing that I'll dive into every once in a while and spend several hours trying to get something to work just to see if I can make it work. Like, I set up, you know, like an Icecast server, just like, yeah, I wonder if I could do that.
Yeah,
and the answer is yes, I can. Took a little work, but yeah, it was doable. Or setting up a VPN or stuff like that. Now I have a moment where I need to change something, and it's like, oh, this sounds terrible. I don't want to do this.
Yeah. What else? What else is going on this week?
What else is going on this week? Well, there's more.
It feels like, I don't know. It feels like it's the calm before the storm that may or may not happen.
The putative October event, which
may or may not happen.
May or may not happen. We did our speculation that I saw several people being like, oh, I heard speculation about the Apple event. And we were like, that was us.
That was us. And they're like, oh, they said it was beyond this date. It's like, well, you know, we say a lot of things. But the fact that there are no iPads, apparently, then that's not great. Right, like that's one less thing to be. And the 16-inch MacBook Pro is still rumored, but might or might not happen, and could potentially just happen with briefings and not an event, which is fine. They have they're busy because they've got their November launch of Apple TV Plus, so maybe they wouldn't. I don't know. I would put the odds at, you know, maybe it's 50-50, knowing what we know now from the rumor types about it.
Yeah, that seems plausible. We would probably find out, you know, at the, like, if we don't hear anything by Wednesday of next week, yeah, it's not happening.
Yeah,
this,
I think,
is my feeling.
I think that's right.
And I would guess by Monday, honestly.
Yeah,
I feel
at this,
like that's
at this
point,
we're like a week and a few days out, and that if that we and we didn't hear this week. So if it's going to happen, you would think that we're running out of time rapidly for that to happen. But
yep.
And I can say this as a canary in a coal mine. I assume, given that I have a pretty good relationship with Mac PR, that if they were doing something, I would probably have gotten pinged about it. Maybe not. Their ways are mysterious, and my status is, you know, as a podcaster slash independent blogger slash columnist, is not like, I'm not on the go-to, like, number one list. But for Mac stuff, they have treated me very well, and I haven't heard anything. This is my canary part right there. Is I can say I haven't heard anything. If I had heard something, I would have to be evasive and not talk about it, but I have not heard a word, a peep from them about it, from that canary. The canary hasn't peeped, or whatever it does, chirped. So, birds is what I'm saying. There are no birds. The black dog barks at midnight, but the canary does not fly.
I understand.
You follow that?
Winks is good as a nod.
So maybe.
Say no more.
Maybe, but I have seen no evidence yet that is going on.
Yeah, there was a funny story this morning, which I think I saw via Stephen Hackett on Twitter, where Mac Rumors was like, we found an icon. That's a 16-inch MacBook. And then I think Guillermo Rambo or something was like, no, that's this year's MacBook, which is the 16,1 model, not the 16-inch model.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, all right. We've delved too far into the tea leaf reading at this point.
This
moment the other day. I gotta say, Jason, I was like thinking about this. I don't know why it sprung to mind, but I was like, oh man, even if Apple just decided they wanted to do an 11-inch version of the MacBook Air they do now, I was like, oh, I would probably buy that.
Mm-hmm.
I had this moment because I've been sitting there waiting, like, oh, I'd really love a like an ARM-based MacBook that's super light and has really long battery life. And, you know, you can't even buy the 12-inch MacBook anymore new. You can buy, I think there are refurbs floating around there still, but, you know, they discontinued it essentially. And I was like, man, there really isn't anything in that slot. And, like, I was like, oh, what if they just, you know, released a smaller version of the MacBook Air? And I was like, yeah, actually, yeah, I would buy that.
The big question is, like, is the MacBook Air meant to completely eliminate the need for something like the MacBook, which they've discontinued? Is what the two-step that they did there is like, haha, the MacBook, it will replace the MacBook Air. And the market said, nope. And they're like, okay, well, we'll get rid of the MacBook and bring the MacBook Air back, which is, you know, they didn't do it all at once, but that is the net result, is now we have the Air and we don't have the MacBook. I was listening to ATP while I was walking the dog yesterday, as I do, and they said something that rang true for me. They also talked about China, which, you know, we broke that pane of glass and pulled that lever last week. So we're on it. We're moving on. What were we talking about now? Now I'm the trash truck's
we're
out my
we're MacBooks. We're on MacBooks.
Yeah. So ARM and Catalina. Right. And this is the moment where I was like, yeah. Like, we talk about, because their premise was, Casey asked a dumb, sorry, Casey, thing. It was like, which is more likely, that Apple would be working toward getting out of China or Apple would be getting out of Intel? And then they're like, well, duh, Intel is easiest, you know, by far, because they're already there. And Casey's like, well, wait, what, you know? And it was like he was making some assumptions that are no longer true. And that's absolutely the case. And they said, you got to look at Catalina, where they have finally ripped out all of this old stuff, all the carbon stuff, 32-bit stuff. And it's hard not to look at that and say that they are not just prepping for leaving Intel on the Mac, but they are poised. I don't think they use that phrase, but like, they are poised to leave Intel now. Like, Catalina seems like an OS that could host an ARM Mac, which means, is that little laptop an ARM Mac? Like, we've been speculating about that for ages now, but like, I think they're there. Like, if they wanted to release a little 12 or 11 inch laptop that was super thin and light like the MacBook, but it was based on ARM, I think they're there now. I think they could do it now that the OS has been revved.
I agree. I mean, like you said, Catalina seems to make a clean break. There's a reason Apple doesn't do any, generally doesn't act in ways that are like, they look from the outside like they're sudden decisions, but clearly on the inside they've been in building for a super long time, like years at times, right? Like even the Intel switchover, like I just alluded to earlier, you know, they had stuff internal running on Intel chips for a long time before they actually decided to make that transition. They were just waiting for the moment at which it seemed like, yeah, now is the time for us to do this. And I think that's the argument here, is the whole ramp up with the, like, we're going to be discontinuing 32-bit apps. We're going to be getting rid of all this stuff. You know, it started years ago. And so that's why, and I say, you know, I the decision for me, like the thought for me about the 11-inch MacBook Air thing was just sort of the, I, of course, really would love the idea of the ARM MacBook, because that's something that we, feels like it should happen, but we have no indication that it's happening, you know.
Right.
And I had that moment of like, I'm just getting to the end of my tether with my 11-inch MacBook Air, which is really starting to creak. Yeah. That I was like, oh, would I just, like, if they just had an October event and they announced a smaller MacBook Air, would I cave and buy that?
But, which the rumors don't support that. But what the rumors do support is
not
a timeline where there's an initial release. I heard somebody poo-pooing this and saying like, oh, you know, why would they release the 16-inch MacBook Pro and have all the other ones coming later? Because I forget, the logic was something like, you know, that they're going to invalidate those other products by releasing one with a new keyboard and all that. And I was like, I think that overstates the keyboard perception in the broader market.
Yeah.
But I think also Apple saying, oh, no, those of you who are desperate for a new keyboard must buy our most expensive and highest margined MacBook Pro if you aren't willing to wait for 6 months. That's very Apple. Like,
yeah,
don't throw me in 100%. The briar patch, right? And then, and then the scenario goes that next spring, let's say, there is also a 14-inch that is the equivalent of the current 13 that uses the new platform, new keyboard, all of that. And I ask myself, at that point, or in the fall next year, maybe, you would move to the consumer laptop, right? You would update the Air, maybe not in June, but maybe by the fall. And I think that that would be with the new keyboard. And that's the point where I think that is around the time where an ARM MacBook might happen. But the thing is, because the MacBook is not the MacBook Air, they could do that any old time, right? They could do that in the spring, or they could do that never. And the fact, I think it is telling that we have no credible ARM MacBook rumors in terms of ARM Mac rumors of any kind, you know, and Mac rumors are harder to come by. And a lot of the supply chain stuff is looking at hardware that would potentially not be any different. But we've also not seen any small Mac laptop rumors, right? So, I don't know. I will say the Air is great. I think if your laptop died, you'd get a Retina MacBook Air.
Oh,
right.
Sure. Yes. That's the clear choice for me right now. It's not exactly what I want, but it is certainly the best of all the options that are out there.
It's pretty great. Even with that keyboard, it's a pretty great little computer.
If I needed something, if I needed a laptop, that's what I would get.
And not that much bigger than the 11. That's the thing. As an 11 fan, it's kind of the 11.
It's the depth. It's very close, except for the depth.
The depth is
the only thing that really makes it much larger. Yeah. And it's a little bit heavier.
A little bit.
You know, just a little bit.
But it's not far.
I get used to it, but it's one of those things where if necessity was the case, I have no trouble going out and buying that computer. But what I'm looking for is more dictated on, you know, something that I would really love, something with just amazing battery life. And I think that's in the same way that performance per, you know, watt was kind of one of the nudging factors in Apple moving to Intel from PowerPC. I feel like that's probably going to be one of the major contributing factors in moving to an ARM chip, you know, a custom designed ARM chip from Intel, is again the increases in battery life. And the possibility, especially as they're, you know, showing that that is something that they've worked extremely hard on in, say, the iPhone 11 series, where they got, you know, some pretty substantive battery life improvements year over year because they're designing their own chips and because, you know, obviously they did make some room for extra battery. But like power management stuff is something they have bought up companies that do that. They have hired a lot of people to work on that. And the reason for that is obvious. We rely on mobile technology, and the one thing that pretty much all mobile technology needs right now is batteries. So the idea that they might be looking at, like, well, we can get like a, you know, 12-hour battery or something, you know, on a MacBook that runs on a custom silicone that we design, that's a pretty compelling story to tell people. I think the questions about how performance plays out is going to be interesting, because certainly the benchmarks we've seen suggest that Apple's custom design silicon is competitive, if not in some cases outstripping, you know, what you get from an Intel computer. But it remains to be seen exactly how that plays into things like, well, does software need to be optimized to take advantage of that? Like, mm-hmm. How exactly does that work in a real world scenario? But, you know, that's kind of small potatoes in some ways. I think I still feel like there's a good chance that if there is an ARM transition, that sounds like a WWC kind of discussion next year, perhaps, whether or not there's a Mac that ships there.
Although they have definitely done technology stuff by dropping, you know, some videos and just making an announcement about it. And but you're right, shipping an ARM Mac with like no warning to developers would be weird.
Rough.
Could they pull it off? Would there be could the apps in the App Store get translated in the Mac App Store? What happens to all the rest? Yeah. Or would they want there to be a run-up period? And maybe they would. Maybe they would want it to be a run-up period, WWDC makes sense.
The best case scenario for Apple is something where there's a transition that you basically don't notice, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you pick up your new ARM MacBook and it works basically just like your old one. Yep. You don't have to do anything. And I think that goes back to what we were talking about with Catalina, right? Like, in some ways, this is the more painful transition, so that when that next transition comes down the road, it's a lot smoother because you won't have all those broken apps.
And the WWDC thing would also track with the idea of having next fall there be ARM systems.
Right, exactly.
And I've been talking about, I mean, ARM makes sense in one way because of power. But whether it's I feel like this is a thing that could happen on the consumer end first, because there are going to be pros who want things that Intel processors do give them. But
that
the consumer,
Mac Pro is not going custom ARM anytime soon.
Exactly. And the iMac Pro isn't either. But the MacBook Pro, I think, isn't for a while, even though there would be battery implications there. But like MacBook Air and iMac,
maybe,
I think might be places where you would see it. So imagine if they say, we're going to release some Macs on a new processor architecture this fall, no details, but you can, you know, you can develop for it now, and here are the issues, and you know, all you really have to do, it's not even like you don't even need to test it. What you really need to do is just use this new version of Xcode that we're shipping in a beta today and recompile, and on the App Store it works like this, and when you're not in the App Store you do this, and we're done. Or they'll say, oh, and it only works with the App Store, haha. Like, they could do that,
right.
But I, you know, they probably won't.
Probably
so,
not.
So, that's I think the most reasonable scenario for doing it. Apple doesn't always do the thing we think is most reasonable,
right? Yeah,
and they do have the power that if they decree it, everybody will be like, okay, I guess we're recompiling all our apps today.
To me, exactly. To me, the compelling story about this too is just like taking a step back from, you know, we're those of us like you and me who have spent so long in the Apple community, you know, still I think there's a vestige of looking at the Mac as kind of its, you know, a showcase for Apple, or like just it's the venerable line, right? Like it's got all this history and this story behind it. And so we put it on very equal footing, if not elevated footing, from a lot of other Apple products, when in fact, if you, you know, take a step back and look at it compared to all of the varied products Apple ships now, it's the only one that doesn't run on Apple custom silicone. The only one,
yep.
Right? The HomePod, the Apple TV, the iPhone, the iPad, the Apple Watch, all of those run on chips that Apple makes itself. And so it becomes increasingly a question of why do you maintain this external dependency, if you will, uh-huh. on this one product line.
You just made somebody very angry by referring to it as silicone, so they're going to be like writing in. So take that.
Silicon. It's pronounced. It's probably John Syracuse.
Silicon.
Silicon. Yeah. Anyways, I think, you know, and this is a dead horse. I feel like we've been beaten for a long time now.
The horse will be beaten until morale improves. Yes. Well. Yes.
Yeah. You know, even a dead horse is right twice a day, Jason.
When?
I don't know. I don't have a clock.
Whoa, zing, boom. That sounds like a punchline to a joke that doesn't make any sense.
Yep, that was what it was.
Do you want, here's another horse ride again for us to beat, which is, again, I was listening to ATP, and they were talking about the eternal question, which is what apps do they use to write, and what formats do they write in? And I thought... I think it's worth talking about it, but the thing that stopped me, and this gets me every time, is John Syracuse saying, I just write in HTML. I write in BBEdit, and I just write in HTML if I'm writing about a blog post or anything that needs to be on the web. I just write it in HTML, and because that's how I learned it, and you know it's good enough for me. And I thought to myself, okay, John's a little younger than I am. John and I have been writing HTML code since the very early days of the web. And I used to write all my HTML code by hand. He points out he uses BBEdit, and he does, you know, he has the shortcuts in BBEdit to do some of the commands and all that. But he's like, he doesn't want, and it's like, I don't need any of this. Sorry, I'm doing a bad John Syracuse impression. Sometimes I do
just
a very
let
good
me
one.
Do it because I sound like him.
Yeah, I know, right? I don't need any of this markdown stuff. I just do HTML. It's fine. And I think to myself, but John, and this is the story. This is why I use markdown is... angle bracket A space href equals quote, paste in your URL, quote, closed bracket, type, open bracket slash A, closed bracket. I know you can put that with BBEdit tools and stuff. You can do a shortcut to do that. I know that. But I started using markdown because I didn't use those tools mostly. I just hand coded it. And you know what happens? It's not just that it takes a long time. It's so easy to mistype one of those characters,
and you miss
the last quote, you miss the last angle bracket, a chunk of your document vanishes because the parser doesn't understand what the heck you're doing because you just wrote bad HTML. And I got to say, Markdown, which I don't even remember when I started using it, the nice thing about Markdown is, like...
readable.
Angle bracket. It's just, like, bracket.
Yeah.
Type, bracket. Like, single characters to delimit what's going on. And the truth of it is... using single characters and then having a script turn it into HTML, even though I know HTML, for me is way more reliable than when I was typing the code myself. And then the second point I'll make is, you know, the thing that always killed me when I wrote in HTML was wrapping everything in paragraph tags. In the early days of the web, you just needed to stick a P on the end of the paragraph and everything was fine.
Yeah.
Or put it at the beginning, but you could stick it on the end.
It made it
pretty readable. But you know, we grew up and realized that those tags needed to wrap the paragraph and all of that. And when one of the last things I did when I was still writing in HTML was I wrote a script in BBEdit that at the end of the process wrapped everything in P tags because I just did not want to type the P tags unless it had other things.
It's
so, and BBEdit, if you've got HTML or Markdown, if you've got HTML, you just put it in like all of our images in six colors. Like that's just raw HTML. I don't have Markdown image stuff that converts into figures with figure captions. It's just that part is HTML that is generated by a script when I upload a file to the server, right? It's not, I don't actually have to type that code usually, unless it's like an animated GIF or something where I have to do it custom. So that was the thing that really stopped me. And ultimately, that is why I use Markdown, is it's more readable, when it's not compiled, but also just because I'm much less likely to make a mistake than I always did inevitably when I wrote. Mm-hmm. By hand in HTML.
Oh yeah, I was writing. I mean, I started writing in HTML by hand, you know, in early to mid 90s, like whenever basically it started cropping up, and I did that for years. I did the same thing. I would type all my tags out by hand, and
then you forget that quote mark at the end of the URL, and you're like, and everything's disappeared.
Gone. Especially when you're then like adding in later on when I was doing code too, like mixed in with it. Like I was starting to do PHP mixed in with it, and you're like, oh man, like what is broken? And then you're like, oh, there was this quote that was supposed to go right there, or I missed the question mark in this tag here. And I also switched to Markdown probably right around the time I started writing a Mac user. I think I probably around that time started switching to Markdown, maybe a little bit earlier. It's just, I haven't looked back. I'll still occasionally, you know, do, like you said, throwing in a few tags here and there when there's something that we can't easily do in Markdown, or I'm not sure what the Markdown syntax is, and it's faster for me to write it by hand than it is to go look up, like, what is the Markdown syntax for this thing that I only ever use once in a blue moon? And it's fine. I mean, and I do some hard coding still, like some HTML hand coding on my site, because WordPress does have, I find, some issues in terms of like how it wants to format certain things that just annoy me, and I want to do something in a particular way, and it's sure. Like, oh, but if you use their, you know, WYSIWYG editor or whatever, it doesn't do that. And so I was like, oh, I'm just going to do this my way. If I'm writing something that is specifically like a piece, and it is for web publication, I'll write it in Markdown.
And you're using Mars Edit usually?
Use Mars Edit for 6 colors. I don't think I even have it set up on my blog. I have it set up for my old blog, but not for my current blog, which I write. I think I just write in the WordPress most of the time for that. And I write my columns for Macworld and BB Edit in Markdown, or in OneWriter on iOS.
Ah, yeah, well, and that's where you and I sync up, because that's totally my system is BB Edit and OneWriter for Mac.
If there
and
were
iOS.
A BB Edit for iOS, I would use that.
I know.
And then I use a variety of different tools for other things. Currently, you mentioned at the top of the show, I'm editing a book, and that means that book is now in Word.
Yeah.
I have some feelings. I complained a little bit on Twitter, and the guy who works in, I think, Mac product marketing, engineering, I don't know, for Word stuff.
You summoned the Microsofties. Oh no.
No, you know, he had some questions, and I was like, I think
they're nice.
So much of the things that I don't like about Word, or that irk me about Word, are like longstanding things that just seem like deeply ingrained, and maybe that's just like how it works. Like, so for example, Word is not great with really large documents, I find, mainly because when you open them, it takes forever for them. It's like they load each page at a time, and I'm like, why? Why is this happening? When you open a big document that's got a ton of comments on it, which I do frequently when I have I'm working with a manuscript. I don't know how many pages the Word doc is, but, you know, this is a 300, 400 word book short book.
It's the best page. How many words is this manuscript?
Yeah. It's about 100,000 words. So I'm opening that, and, you know, you sort of see it starts like loading, and it does the thing where it's like, until the page count just starts going up as you it's loading all the pages just linearly. I'm like, cool. And then it loads in. I open the comment thing that shows me all the track comments. I'm doing this I've started actually doing a lot of it on iPad because I actually think the Word client on iPad is pretty good. And in some ways I like it better than the Mac Word client.
Me too.
But it does the same thing where it's like, open the comments, and it's like, comments just start scrolling past. And it's like, why is this happening? Like, this seems inane. And I just have a lot of trouble with on the iPad with the text model. And I'm not sure how much of this is iPad OS and how much of this is Microsoft, but like text handling on the iPad in general has always been a little weird, especially since they added the ability to use things like the smart keyboard or external keyboards. It was never, a lot of that still feels like a little bit bolted on to me, in the way that trying to move your cursor focus without, you know, you got to really start like tapping, you know, in where you want it on the screen, and then trying to figure out a place to put it. And with Words, sometimes it selects things, like, so if there's track changes on and you have a section that has been highlighted and there's a comment attached to it. So in my manuscript, it's like sort of highlighted blue, and I tap on it, and I'm like, I want to change this thing in here. And I as soon as I tap on it, it selects it and like shows the linked comment. And I'm like, but I want to edit something. The keyboard's frozen out at that point. Like, I can hit the keyboard all I want, won't change a thing. And then I have to like tap a few times to get it to like actually put an insertion point here. And I'm like, this is just super annoying, especially when I'm bouncing back and forth between a manuscript and comments. And then like sometimes I'll flip off the track changes markup so that I can see, you know, without all the stupid crossed out things and like make sure that what I want to be the final product actually looks reasonable. I didn't leave weird orphans in there or something.
Right.
And it does this stupid thing where I turn markup on or off. And because I'm guessing because the document length physically changes, right, when the markup gets removed or put back in, it just scrolls me to a random page that's like might be two pages away from where I just was. I have to go start scrolling to find the text again. And it's like, this is just making my job. And I'm doing this dozens of times. Mm-hmm.
Because keeping its view where it is, but the size of the content being viewed has changed, and so it's moved, and it's not following
your
content.
That's just dumb. It's terrible.
We, at one point at Macworld, there was a version of Word that came out, and we all were complaining about Word so much that we ended up having a meeting. It was great. Again, this is, you know, say a lot of things about Microsoft, and they are a very different company now than they were back in the day, but they are kind of pretty customer focused. Like, we complained about it a lot in meetings with them demoing things. We'd be like, did you address this? This is an issue. You should take this back to them. This is a big thing. And a lot of it was about change tracking and comments.
Yeah.
And they came with like five people from Seattle. Well, some of them are from Seattle, some of them are from the MS Bay, to our office and sat there for like an hour asking us questions about our workflow at Macworld and like how we used it and what things we were running into. And, you know, did that lead anywhere? I would like to think that we helped contribute to their understanding of how people were using change tracking, because I think what they didn't realize at that time was that it was so, maybe they realized it, but like I got the sense that like there are two customers being served, and one of them is lawyers and one of them is publishers. And that they weren't clear on the difference. And you see this sometimes where actually a thing that I've been involved with a little bit is this AB5 thing in California, where they're saying that in California, you can't be a freelancer if you write more than 35 stories a year for an outlet and all of this kind of stuff. And I think the nub of the problem with this story cap that they've put into place is the person who wrote this bill, the lawyer and activist who is involved in this bill, she has a view of what a story is for journalism, and it's a kind of romantic view of it. And the truth is there are lots of stories, including stories that take months to write and are 10,000 words long, and there are stories that are a 80-word blog post with a link to somewhere, and they're not the same. And it's a similar kind of thing where it's like somebody who's out of category doesn't understand what's going on in the category. And and some of the stuff in Word and other word processors that's like change tracking, all of that, I wonder sometimes whether it's either that they just don't understand it, they're developers and they do code and they are thinking in terms of diffs and that's not how writing works, or whether it's that they have heard from their clients who are lawyers about doing redlining changes in legal documents, which is also not how publishers work.
I just have this one bugbear too that really, this is what I think started me down the complaining track on Word, which was, so I'm going through and I'm addressing comments from my editor. Word has an ability to mark a comment as resolved, which is fine. Like for me, I'm going through and I'm checking stuff and I'm like, oh, yep, fix that. I can just hit this resolved. The problem with it is when I do that, at least on the iPad version for sure, and I don't think this feature exists on any version of Word I've used, but that comment is still there. It's just sort of like grayed out. And it's like now I'm literally, I have 800 comments on this. I am scrolling through all these grayed out comments that I've dealt with, but they're still there. And I'm like, why can't I just hide all resolved comments? Why? Then I can see only the ones I have to deal with still, rather than trying to hunt through 800 comments to find the, you know, 50 that I'm still actively working on. It blows my mind. I don't,
That what is the point of marking a comment resolved if it's still going to sit there?
Yeah.
I just don't get it. And I agree with you. I think that publishing workflows work in a way that is not something they probably deal with. And I would, this is one of those things I would be like, I got invited to like send them some idea, send in like your things that you're running into and they'll take a look at them. And it's like, I would love to do this. I will do it if I have time to get around it. I'm on deadline. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to spend my time compiling a lengthy, even though it makes me angriest right now because it's actually affecting me. I'm not going to spend the couple hours to like write up a bunch of stuff and complain about it when I need to be finishing what I'm actually supposed to be doing. After that, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. I just did this. So my photos book should be out. The new version, new edition about iOS 13 and Catalina should be out next week. I spend, some time in the summer and fall working on that book. I have to update it with all the changes. I've also been very gradually quick start or something. This very visual, not very many words, lots of like, here's how you do this task kind of thing. And that's a format that's been deprecated. Those books, Take Control, are not published by Adam and Tanya Engst anymore. They're published by Joe Kissel. And Joe has made his own style changes. And also over time, what has happened is that as Photos has gone on, like I feel like the iOS version of Photos has come much closer to the Mac version of Photos. And that I think both of them are so relevant that I wanted the book to go from being a book that was just about the Mac to being about iPad and iOS. This has taken a lot of work because I have to I keep removing here's a list of things you can do here that made way more sense in the initial format than it does in the current format. And then this year I had to, last year I added a bunch of iPad and iPhone sections, like here is how you do this on the iPad and iPhone because this is important, last year and 2 years ago. This year all of those sections are gone, and everything except if it's a platform only feature is just integrated. Like here's how the Photos view on the Mac, the button is here, on iPad it's here, on iPhone it's here, like complete. Right. So a lot of work. They use Nicis Writer.
Yep. I've worked on a Take Control book. I'm familiar with the Nicis Writer.
Which does a pretty good job with comments and track changes, I have to say. It's an unusual app. It's, quirky. Nicis Writer has always been quirky in all of its different iterations over time. But the reason I mention all of this is just to say I spent a lot of time in it this last 2 weeks. And there is nothing, I think it has a memory leak. There is nothing better than having a word processing window open and typing a sentence into it on an iMac Pro and watching the letters go in at a rate of about one letter per second. And the solution is you save, you quit. You open the app again. Yep. And everything works okay. Not great, but okay for a while. And then it bogs back down again. And it's some combination of a memory leak and Nicis Writer. And I think also that, once you've got hundreds of comments and hundreds of tracked changes. In fact, at one point, my editor, Shali, said, oh, I didn't see you got it back to me. I didn't see you accept all of my changes. And I was like, okay, two things here. First off, I'm not going to go through and individually accept all your changes. So I would have to actually just select all and then accept all, which you can do that. That's fine. But the truth is I turned off viewing changes so mm-hmm. I could work because it was an unusable experience until I turned. Yes. I just don't show them to me. You can track them. She can see them later. I don't want to see that because I need to actually write sentences at a rate higher than one character per second. So yeah, that was great.
Yeah, it is. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there with one of those, like, we are using these incredibly powerful devices that can do amazing things, like whether it's even an iPad, all the way up to an iMac Pro. All these things are incredibly powerful, and yet text is what dragged it to a halt.
A lot of it is done pretty well, like the Unix processing model and prioritization model. Like most of the time, they get it right. Where if you're using this UI, it should be responsive, even if there are huge things happening elsewhere in the system. It doesn't matter. you got a text box, you're entering text, it should flow. Like, prioritize this process. And mostly it does a good job, but there are times when it doesn't. And it's and a lot of times it is, it's not about the system being under stress. It's about the app falling apart. And but still, I have those moments where I think, you know, I could just get a PowerBook 160 on eBay and run right now, and it would be real speedy because it was written in 68K assembler, and it was the fastest word processor of all time. I could run Word 5.1A, and that would be faster than this thing. But, you know, it would also not have any features, so there's that.
I mean, and every once in a while, I'm like, well, I wonder if, I mean, you know, Pages has gotten pretty good interoperability, but, like, with a book, especially a book that is 100,000 words long, getting into format munging is just one of those things where it's like there's too many. Even with it, like, so I write in Scrivener, I export to a Word doc. Mostly it's pretty good. I have run into some issues. Sometimes, I don't know why, I've run into definitely some lines that run together where something in the way the pages are formatted didn't quite make the jump. So you'll see, like, a paragraph ends, and then instead of the next paragraph having a carriage return, there's just a tab. So you're, like, looking at it and you're being like, there's just too much space.
Yeah.
Ah, yes, there was supposed to be a return there. Sometimes that happens. I'm a little annoyed because it's just, it's hard to catch without rereading the entire manuscript. While I do that from time to time, it also feels very much like, this is not my job. This is it. This is what you have a copy editor for, or a proofer. But it is one of those things where it's like, anything more than that, than sort of just like, I export from Scrivener, now I'm in Word. I live in Word for the rest of this manuscript because there's
you can't
go back and forth. Yeah, I have to. Like,
would be nice if
would be great.
If it wasn't the case, but it's the case.
It's the way it is. So yeah, Word is a. I'm not going to go so far as to call it a necessary evil because I don't think it's that bad. I actually think, and I'm using Office 365. I think it's a pretty solid piece of software. It just has a lot of quirks that I think a lot of people who do use Word regularly have just been like, yeah, I just live with it. And it's the same thing with any other program.
Sure.
Right? Like Scrivener has that too. Scrivener has quirks and it's like, yeah, I'm just going to live with it because I can use it the way I want and I know what the issues are.
And it's a general purpose tool. I mean, that's the truth. Is Word, the reason that it has such broad appeal and that everybody, that they use it, is that everybody's agreed to use it. And they've agreed to use it in part because it has been built for that purpose of having the broadest, most general appeal. And so, it's never going to be what you want.
Because
it's
platform
for
too,
everybody.
Right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's the other aspect, right? Like, you can be pretty sure that when somebody sends you a Word doc, if you're on a Mac or a PC or an iPad, it's going to look the same. And that's not nothing. Like, that is kind of a big deal in the same way. Like, it didn't used to be that way, right? You used to send somebody a Word doc from Microsoft Office on the Mac to Microsoft Office on the PC, and it'd be like, crapshoot.
Yeah.
But these days, pretty good. And yeah, it's what we have.
All right. Well, if you're interested in talking about Linode servers and Ubuntu, if you're interested in hearing about Markdown, and if you were interested in hearing about Word, thanks for listening to this podcast. Everyone else is gone, but you're all here, so thank you. Oh, well, I guess we'll find out if we're doing anything at the end of the month or not. That's fine with me. Like, I just want to know. I am only now coming out of the blob of work that happened with the OS releases. Like, literally, when I handed in my book final edits on Monday, I had that moment because I worked all weekend and and then I thought, gee, I should look at the list of all the things that I put off the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks while I've been doing this, and then I spent this week doing all of those things, which makes me feel very productive, but it's also like, you know, it's a busy season. Somebody asked me, you know, can you pitch in with this project I'm working on? I'm like, this is the worst time for it because it's like the high season. Ask me in a little while. But unless Apple does do an event or release some Macs or whatever it's going to do for its last gasp before the holiday season, I feel like I'm now moving out of that high season kind of thing, which is good. That's good. It last year, because they had that event, it was that madness extended from early September through mid-November, which was not right. So great for again, great to cover it, great to have stuff to talk about, kind of exhausting for yours truly. So we'll see. We'll see. I'm fine either way.
Indeed, we shall.
But we got a lot to write about now. That is the thing that also strikes me during this period is, boy, the summer you're just scraping. And then you get to September and you're like, woo, there's so much. Like, I can't cover it all. Well, much more to come. But I think we're done for now. Dan, you are gone next Friday.
Yeah, I'm going out of town for a day. So I will not be
Can I catch you Thursday?
Yeah, I got to look at my schedule and try to remember what time I'm leaving. I'm technically leaving on Thursday and then coming back like late afternoon on Friday. But I'll look.
We'll see. And if not, maybe I'll find a guest host. I don't know who that would be. The cat. I had thought about it. Could I set up a microphone and then just like have the cat meow? But he'd lose interest and wander away at some point.
That seems likely.
Yeah. One man's descent into madness. A man and his cat make a podcast together.
When cats descend into madness.
They're already there. All right. Well, until whenever, Dan. Bye.
Yes. Bye, Jason.